Good morning, Boker Tov. For those of you who didn't get a sheet yet, don't worry. There are more being copied and they're being brought down. It is important today to have the sheet, to be able to look over it, because even though there aren't many sources, for those who always say we should do less sources, then this is your day. There are only 8 sources on the sheet. But that's the good news. The even better news is that they're so complicated, we need a lot of diagrams to understand them. If I could just ask you to remember to turn off your phones, please, because no matter how many times we ask, there's always somebody's phone that goes off. I'm also very pleased to announce that the Shir has been sponsored by Ziva and David Katz. Many of you know David Katz, who does a lot of work here in the OU, here in the center. Le'il Rishmad Avi Moiri Yecheskel Ben David Yehuda, Zichron Librocha, whose Yortzeit is on Yud Beshvat. So we thank David and Ziva for the sponsorship very much, and encourage if anyone else would like to sponsor a share, please speak to the OU and they'll be very happy to receive your sponsorship. Now, as promised, I would like to do a series of 3, starting with today, which we'll introduce in a second. After that, just looking a little bit forward, in Yes Hashem, after this series of 3, I'd like to get into issues of copyright. I've been asked by a few people to do issues to do with VPNs, for example. People sometimes are barred from looking at certain sporting events on their computers because they have a computer which is in Israel and it's only available to people in America. So you can circumvent that by getting a false, quote-unquote, VPN, which pretends that you're in America and you can get it in the virtual. So this raises the whole issue of copyright, what is the status of stuff which is on the internet, books, etc. We've never talked about that, and I'd like to do at least 1 or 2 shirim on that after this series. A virtual private network. Well, don't worry about that today. Okay, fine. The next question, which is very important, is it too warm in here?
Yes.
Okay, that was resounding. So please could somebody ask them to turn the air conditioning on, because it is warm today, and if you're warm now, in 20 minutes, everyone will be either wilting or sleeping, or both. Okay, I would like to give a series of 3 on the same basic issue, which is halacha in extreme places. I don't know if you know, but there's a trip that runs right now, a kosher trip to Lapland in Finland. Quite a lot of people go up to Lapland. In February in Lapland, it's not so straightforward to forget about the weather, but there are all sorts of issues in terms of the latitude and the longitude as to how that works, more latitude in Lapland. So I'd like to give a series of 3. Here are some more sheets. Who does not have a sheet, please raise your arm. Okay. And the air conditioning is going on, so everything's going right, which is great. Maybe I'll take them from the rabbi.
I'm going to give you a bunch, and I'll take them over there. Thank you very much.
Can I take a
week? Guys, pass it around.
Okay, so today's topic, all these topics lead one to the other. They all connect. Today I'm really talking about East and West, which is the issue of the international dateline. I've called it here the halachic dateline. I once gave a shiur which was advertised as I'll be talking about the international dateline. Quite a few people thought I was talking about finding a shidduch. And so since then I've carefully chosen the halachic dateline. Maybe that still sounds like finding a shidduch. But the 3 topics which really run one into the other, and you'll see they build on each other, is first of all the issues of the halakhic dateline, second of all the issues of going to extreme latitudes north or south, people who want to go to Alaska or to Finland, etc., and what happens when the day lasts for months and months on end. Do we say, look, it's Shabbos this month for a whole month? How does that work? Forget about a 3-day Yom Tov, how that works, although that's usually around the equinox, so it's not going to be a problem. And the 3rd shiur, which we need to talk about, is what happens when you actually leave the planet and go to the moon or into orbit, etc. And we've had a number of Jewish astronauts, and we will have more, I'm sure. We'll talk a little bit about that. It's worth at least 1 week's discussion in a couple of weeks from now. But today, this topic actually we dealt with To some degree, although if you've got very good memories, you will see that the sheets have been significantly upgraded. A number of sources added, a number of new diagrams and charts, and I think it's definitely worth discussing again. Why do we need an international date line at all? So from the 14th century onwards, people became aware as they were circumnavigating the globe for the first time that there was something called the circumnavigator's paradox. That even though they'd been counting the days faithfully from when they set off in a ship from Lisbon or Italy or wherever it was, when they went around the world and they came back, they found they were often a day out. How did that happen? And they realized that actually, somewhere on the planet, there has to be a line where the date changes, where you go forward a day or backwards a day. And it's obvious, if you think about it. Imagine that we're standing here in Yerushalayim right now, and it's 25 past 10. Let's say that we fly east. We fly to India, then we fly to China. So, as you know, the time gets later and later. Okay, we'll skip China just for today. Okay? We'll go over China, we'll go to Australia. As you go further to the east, it gets later and later and later. Right now, the time in Australia is, I'm not sure exactly, 9 hours forward, so we're talking the 6 o'clock in the evening, 7 o'clock in the evening. You keep going, you keep going, you keep going. Eventually, you go all the way around the planet. As you go 360 degrees round, for every 15 degrees, there's another hour that you gain or lose, because obviously there are 24 hours in a day. That divides nicely into 360, 15 times. So if you go all the way around the planet very quickly, you'll come right back to the OU Israel Center, and it'll be 25 past 10 on Thursday. And you'll say, well, how did that happen? Because according to the people that I left behind, it's still Wednesday. How did I end up going around the planet and it ended up Thursday? And the answer is, that can't be the case. There must be a line, a point on the planet where you keep going round and it goes back a day from Thursday into Wednesday. And you'll know that that's what happens. If you get in a very fast plane now and you fly east, very quickly, it'll go 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and eventually you'll go back to 8 o'clock on Tuesday night, which is in LA or whatever it is now in Hawaii. It's still Tuesday night, and you'll end up back exactly where you started at the right time. That's obvious. Everybody knows that. And as you go east, eventually you'll go back a day. And as you go west, eventually you'll skip forward a day. If you go from LA to Australia, you'll know that you go forward a day. If you go from Australia to LA, you'll go back a day. So far, everybody's very happy. Hopefully, it's very straightforward. They decided they have to draw a line. Where are they going to draw a line? So they said, we need to draw a line where the day changes in a place where people are going to be least inconvenienced. If you draw it through the middle of New York, you're going to have people on one side of the road it's Wednesday, and on the other side of the road it's Tuesday. Now, this does happen a little bit in America and Russia, where there are multiple time zones, and you can have a change of time zone. They tried to change the time zones not in the middle of a town, but you do have situations where it's 1 o'clock over there and 2 o'clock over there. But to have a whole day change, they said, we don't want to do that. So let's draw it down the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Really, nobody is living in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. At least that's what they thought. There are actually quite a lot of little islands scattered around the Pacific Ocean, and these people get very upset about being on this side or that side. Okay, we'll get on to that in a minute. So in 1884, representatives from 25 countries, they convened in Washington at what they call the International Meridian Conference. And they said, let's pick a line, which is the international date line. They decided, since the navigation capital of the world was Greenwich in London, if you've ever been to Greenwich, there's a little line where it says, this is zero, yeah? They decided, let's go 180 degrees around from that line, which conveniently goes down the middle of the Pacific Ocean. If you go to page one, just shows you all the time zones, which I'm sure you're well aware of. If you go to page two, please, you'll see I brought you three diagrams. I have in my hand actually a color version, which is a little easier to see, but the black and white version should be pretty good as well. If you look here, there's three diagrams. They all show the international date line. The one on the top is the most up-to-date. Then you'll see it runs down between Russia and America pretty much, down the middle of the Pacific Ocean, but it does wiggle around quite a lot. And you'll see in one particular place, it shifts very suddenly to the west, to the east rather, and then comes back again. And we'll see why that happened in a minute. Basically, you can see it on the globe as well, and you can see it on the figure 4. Figure 4 is a slightly different line to figure Two, how did that happen? Because as I said, every now and then there are islands in the middle of the Pacific, for example, Kiribati, Samoa. I don't know if anyone's ever been to these places. They don't tend to be on the must-visit list for a kosher cruise. But every now and then they decide, well, would we rather be on the Australian side or would we rather be on the American side? And there's politics and there's economics, etc. So what they did quite recently is they shifted the line so that it goes to the east, so that there were some islands that could be on the Australian side. They decided we'd rather be in the same day as Australia than in the same day as Los Angeles because we do more trade with Australia, etc. So actually, because of the vagaries of the line, there can be places in the world which are 24 hours, 25 hours, or even 26 hours apart, because the line goes like that in different places, but they're not places you've ever been and probably will never go, because they're uninhabited islands in the middle of the Pacific. Although you never know. So that's basically the international dateline. Is there such a thing as a halachic dateline? In other words, for us, it's not just a question of convenience or inconvenience. Is it Tuesday on this side of the street? Is it Wednesday on that side of the street? We need to know when it's Shabbos. And if it's Shabbos today, or if it's Shabbos tomorrow, if it's Shabbos on Friday, is there going to be a situation where it's Shabbos on that side of the street and Friday on this side of the street, or Sunday on that side of the street? This is important for us to know, because just because Britain decided that it's the prime meridian and they decided the line is 180 degrees, that doesn't mean that Chazal were interested in Greenwich, quite frankly. Greenwich is very random. Is there an equivalent in the halachic realm of the international dateline? And we'll see soon this became a very important question in the 1940s for reasons that will be apparent in a few minutes. Let's start with some introductions. First of all, is the world flat or is the world round? Let's start with that. Now, flat. Oh, gosh. So let's say that the world is round, because the world is round. What did the rabbis think? Did the rabbis think the world was flat, or did the rabbis think the world was round? Now, I don't know to what extent they really thought about it on a daily basis, but the sources that we have indicate very clearly that they thought the world was round, okay, which is good. If you look at number one, says the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Kolat Slamim Asurin, it's actually Mishnah there, it says all statues are prohibited. There was always a problem in the ancient world. People had statues, or the Romans had statues. Was this statue Avodah Zarah? Or was it just a statue which didn't have the same status as the Avodah Zarah? How do I know which statues are really idolatry and which statues are not? So have a look in number one. Kol Atzlamim Asurim says the Mishnah that all the statues are prohibited. The Chachamim Omrim, Eina Asa Ela Koshi Yesh Biyadu Makel. The ones that you have to look out for which are really problematic are the ones where the statue is holding a stick, or Tzipor, or a bird, or Kadur. Or a ball, a globe. Imagine Atlas with the globe on his back. Why? Says the Gemara, number two over the page, to page three. Says the Gemara, Kadur, Shitofet et atzmo, tachat kol ha'ulam kulo kadur. Because this statue represents that this God is holding up the entire world, which of course is a globe. Which is very interesting, because according to this, it seems to indicate that the non-Jews at the time also felt that the world was round. And it may be that people have always felt that the world is round, apart from some people who prefer to think that the world is flat. There is a very unusual midrash in the Gemara Yerushalmi, which Tosfos brings here on the spot. Number three, Kekador, why do we think the world is round? Sheha'olam agul, the world is curved. And by the way, you can even see, if you stand on the sea, you can see that the horizon is not straight. You can see that there is a curve to the horizon. Okay, it might be a flat curve, I suppose. But says the Gemara, no. Sha'olam agul, kidi'ita b'yushami, Tosfos quotes Yerushalmi, there's a medrash, shela Alexandrus Mokedon, Alexander of Macedonia, ala lamala, he went up in a rocket of some kind, ad shera kol ha'olam kakadur, until he could see the curvature of the earth. There's Hayam Kakara and the sea like a big plate. Perish Yam Okyanus, Shimakit Kolaula, meaning the Atlantic Pacific Sea, the big sea, which surrounds the whole world. So somehow or other the Midrash is talking about Alexander the Great going up in a rocket and looking down on the world and seeing that the world is actually round. So we're pretty happy that the world is round. And if we move on from that basis to the 1940s. What happened in the 1940s? So as is well known, a number of the yeshivot were able to escape to the Far East from Europe, specifically Chachmei Lublin and the Mir Yeshiva. The Mir is the famous one. Now the Mir obviously ended up in Shanghai, and they spent quite a number of years in Shanghai. But before they got to Shanghai, they went to Kobe in Japan. And they were in Kobe in Japan for quite some time, and they were concerned at the following. They were concerned that they may have actually crossed over the halakhic dateline, meaning the international dateline is way, way to the east of Kobe. Therefore, Kobe is the same day of the week as everyone else, at least as far as they think. Whereas halakhically, the people that were in Kobe at the time were worried, well, maybe we actually already crossed the line, and Keilu, we already went back a day. We already went back a day. So in Kobe, when they say it's Saturday, really it's Friday. And when they say it's Sunday, really it's Shabbos. And they didn't know what to do, and therefore they kept Shabbos for 2 days, for quite some time, while they were in Kobe. And they sent a letter, we'll see soon, to a number of the major poskim in Eretz Israel, specifically the Chazon Ish, Rav Tukhachinsky, others as well, we'll see who they are and what they said, Rav Tzipetach Frank, and said, what do we do? And they were specifically concerned, not just because of Shabbos, okay, you can keep 2 days Shabbos. And we'll see, they kept basically like people keep a day and a half in when they don't know whether they're keeping 1 day Yom Tov or 2 days Yom Tov. They basically kept a day and a half of Shabbos, they kept Saturday of Shabbos, and they kept Sunday just in case. Okay? But they said, Yom Kippur's coming up. What are we going to do on Yom Kippur? Which day do we keep Yom Kippur? Do we keep it on Wednesday? That year, Wednesday was Yom Kippur. It was Wednesday, October the 1st. Or do we keep it on Thursday? Because maybe we've already crossed the line, and what the Japanese are calling Wednesday is really Tuesday. And we need to keep Yom Kippur on the correct day, which is what the Japanese are calling Thursday, which is really Wednesday. We're not going to keep Yom Kippur for 2 days, or are we? Do we have to do that? What are we going to do? And they wrote a letter to various different poskim and said, what is your opinion? The one who wrote back the most comprehensive response was the Chazon Ish, who obviously was in Eretz Yisrael this time in the 1940s, and he said, I think that there is a halachic dateline, number one, and I think you're right, you have crossed it, and you are actually a day behind what everybody around you thinks you are, and the halachic dateline is a little bit to the west of you, and he'll explain exactly why. There is a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that talks about the Molad. Now, what is the Molad? The Molad is the exact precise moment when the moon phases from the old moon into the new moon, when there's an exact alignment, and it's the moment of the new moon. They announce it in Shul. The Molad will be XYZ, etc., although the Molad that they announce isn't the actual astronomical Molad. I'm not getting into a shir on that because it's way above my scientific pay grade, if you like. But for the purposes of this Gemara, we're talking about the Molad. And the Gemara comes up with an interesting statement, number four. Kisalik Rebbe Zeira, when Rebbe Zeira left, okay, Shalach Lahu, he sent a letter from Eretz Israel back to the rabbis in Bavel. And he said, this is what you have to do about the Molad. Tzarech She, I mean number four on page three. Tzarech She Yehei Laila V'yom Min HaChodesh. Whenever you're going to declare the Molad, there has to be a full night and a full day of that month. In that first day of the month. It's all going to be very unclear for a few minutes. Maybe even unclear after a few minutes, but we'll do our best. V'zoshama Abba Avud Rebbe Shimlai. And this is what the father of Avud Rebbe Shimlai said as follows. Mechashvin et toldato. We work out the consequences of when we're going to declare the Molad. It says the following. Noilad kaidem chatzot. If the Molad occurs before chatzot. Chatzot here means midday. In Yerushalayim, if the Molad comes out before midday in Yerushalayim, b'yadua, we know for sure, shenirin samach l'shkiyat achama, that it's appearing, this new moon, before sunset. However, loy noilad kodem achatzos, but if the Molad in Yerushalayim, which is the key place, is only after midday, then b'yadua, then we know equally, shaloy nira samach l'shkiyat achama, that it will not appear close to sunset. What's going on here? So the Chazon Ish understood that the Baal HaMa'or, one of the main commentaries in Provence in the Middle Ages, and others, the Kuzari, and in fact the Chazon Ish said that this is Roiv Rishonim, most of the Rishonim are understanding this way. So what the Gemara is talking about is following. It's saying the follows, as follows. If the Molad is at midday in Yerushalayim, that is the last moment where the day is just beginning somewhere far away in the world. That is the last point at which there is a new day of Rosh Chodesh, that there's going to be a whole day of Rosh Chodesh, a night and a day, because of course the halakhic day starts at night. So noon is the cut-off point. Noon in Yerushalayim, where is the last place on earth where the day just begins. Afternoon, you've already crossed it. Look at the Kuzari number 5. The Kuzari, for whatever reason, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, is interested in this issue of the Molad. Yes?
When you say noon, you mean halachic noon?
Yes, halachic noon. Did they put the air conditioning on?
Doesn't feel like it.
Can someone, another delegation, please, ask them if they can, whatever they tried to do last time, if they can do it more? Right, look at the Kuzari. The Kuzari, of course, is involved in discussing the philosophy of Judaism with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, sets up this whole conversation between the king of the Khazars, who we know historically did convert at some point in the 8th, 9th century, and he sets up a conversation between the king of the Khazars, a rabbi, a philosopher, an Islamic theologian, and a priest. And very quickly into this conversation, the king of the Khazars does convert to Judaism, and he spends the rest of the time talking to the rabbi about what Judaism really says about different things. And the question of the dateline comes up. Look in number 5. Says the king, was not the day primarily calculated as dawning first in China, because it forms the eastern commencement of the inhabited earth? Oh, so he says, isn't China the first place to have the new day? Interesting, China. Says the rabbi, Shabbat begins in China 18 hours later than in Eretz Israel, since the latter lies in the center of the world. We'll get back to that soon. Sunset in Eretz Israel, therefore, concurs with midnight in China. And midday in Eretz Israel concurs with sunset in China. This is how they are understanding that Gemara, that noon in Eretz Israel is somehow the sunset in China. This is based on the 18 hours in the Talmudical rule, and he quotes the Gemara here, if the conjunction of the moon takes place before midday, the new moon becomes visible near sunset. A place must, however, exist, and this is the dateline, which is at the same time extreme west and the beginning of the east. He says here, it's very remarkable already in the 12th century, there has to be a dateline in the world. This is, for Eretz Israel, the beginning of the inhabited world, not only from the point of view of the law, but also from that of natural science. If this were not so, the days could not have definite names, since every point of the equator could be east or west at the same time. And actually, this is a remarkable Kuzari, because 300 years before anyone circumnavigated the globe and came up with this question of the paradox, when does the date change, he already identified there must be a place in the world where the date changes, otherwise there'd be complete randomness as to where was Tuesday and where was Wednesday, etc. And they also define this as being 18 hours earlier in some ways than 18 hours from midday in Eretz Israel. Where does that come out? So the Chazanish basically takes the view that the halachic dateline is 180 degrees to the west of Eretz Israel. 180 degrees earlier than Eretz Israel. Now, of course, 270 degrees to the west of Eretz Israel. So why go 270 degrees? Let's go 90 degrees east. It's the same thing. So if you go 90 degrees east, you hit the halachic dateline. Where does that dateline actually go through? So if you look just for a second, turn over to page 4, you'll see a nice picture, which hopefully will demonstrate this quite well. This is a picture that I found on the Star K website. And they've drawn it quite nicely here. What you have here, if you look in the middle between Russia and Alaska, I'm sure you can identify Russia there. It says Asia to the right of that, and Alaska there is at the top of the American landmass. Between those is the international dateline. You see that wiggling around? You recognize the line as the line. If you look to the left of that, you'll see it says Chazon Ish line. Chazon Ish line. You see where it says Chazon Ish line? So the Chazon Ish line goes all the way through from Russia, it goes down through Russia, it goes down through China, and it goes down also through the Philippines, it cuts through Australia, etc. And therefore the Chazon Ish says that technically speaking, the halachic dateline goes through the middle of Russia, China, Australia. Which means, to the west of that line, on the left-hand side of that line, it is a day later. To the east of that line, it is a day earlier. Okay, very nice. So we're all happy that that's the halachic dateline. And therefore, he told them, Japan clearly lies on the quote-unquote wrong side. It lies to the to the east of that halachic deadline, and therefore, indeed, you are correct. You have to keep every day a day later than the day that the locals think it is. Because even though they think it's Saturday, it's actually Friday. And even though they think it's Sunday, actually it's Shabbos. So Kol HaKavod, you've been keeping 2 days Shabbos. That's the right thing to do. And as far as he's concerned, Yom Kippur for you should not be on Wednesday, which is when the locals, if they were Jewish, would be keeping Yom Kippur. But you have to keep Yom Kippur on Thursday. Because the day has changed. Yes, sir?
So if that was a determination, why would they then have to keep 2 days Shabbos?
Oh, I'll tell you why. Because there are other people that don't think that. The Chazon Ish is not the only opinion. And the locals are thinking it is Saturday. And we'll see soon that there is a Sofek zone between that line and other lines where we accept that we think it's X, but it could be that it's not X. It could be Y. And in those areas, you end up having to keep 2 days as a Sofek. And the truth is, keeping 2 days Shabbos is not particularly difficult. I mean, if you get used to it, you can do it. It's not the end of the world. And I know people, by the way, who have done this. We'll get to that in just a second. But that's what he suggested to them. Yom Kippur, he said, you don't have to keep 2 days. You have to keep 1 day, and that day is going to be Thursday and not Wednesday. Now, however, the Chazon Ish did say that for all sorts of reasons, I actually hold that the line cannot cut down the middle of the land. Because otherwise you will find a situation where it is Shabbos on one side of the street, and Sunday on the other side of the street. And in fact, the Chazon Ish's line, the Sar Kei, make a point of saying that the line cuts through the city of Changchung in China. Have you ever been to Changchung? I've never been to Changchung. I'm sure it's worth a visit. But actually, there's a street called Dongfeng Street in Changchung, and the Chazon Ish's technical line goes right through the middle of that street. What does that mean? It means that if you're in the eastern strip of Dongfeng Street, okay, you could be saying Kiddush, while people are blocked to the west, are actually saying Havdalah. Which would also mean that depending on how you feel about Shabbos, you could either get all the way to Motzei Shabbos, saying Eliyahu Anavi, make Havdalah, and then say, you know something, I love Shabbos so much, I'm just going down the block, we'll do it all again. We'll go down a little bit and go back to Friday night, and we'll sing Shalom Aleichem all again, we'll do the whole thing again. Or if you're not so much into Shabbos, you'll get to Friday night, sing Shalom Aleichem, and say, enough of this, I'm going to Havdalah, I'm going a block down the road, we'll sing Havdalah and finish. We'll have a 15-minute Shabbos, and that's enough. So says the Chazon Ish, we're not going to do that. That's not going to happen. And therefore, because based on the principle of Greira, he bases it on one of the Talmidim of the Rosh, the Yisoid Olam, who says that actually when the line hits the land, it doesn't go straight through the land. It comes and curls around the coast. Okay? So if you look here, you'll see, it's a bit hard to see in the black and white, but when the Chazon Ish's land actually hits Russia in the north, it doesn't go all the way through, it actually turns immediately with the coast and goes around the coast and follows the coast. So it actually turns out that all of Russia, mainland Russia, will be on the right side of the line. Nachon, all of mainland China will be on the right side of the line. All of Australia, which is a big relief for all those people in Sydney and Melbourne who thought that they were now on the wrong side of the line, they'd have to keep Shabbos on Sunday. No, according to the Chazon Ish's actual psak, he says the line will go round the outside of the landmass. So actually, it's not a problem unless you happen to be offshore.
Oh.
He said, therefore, China's actually not a problem, because the reality is that the line follows the coast. But Japan is, because Japan is an island. And any time you're on an island, you are indeed, according to the Chazon Ish, going to be a day ahead. Now, what does that mean? That means, according to the Chazon Ish's even practical fact, if you're standing on the beach in Australia on Sunday, that's very nice, being on the beach, getting a bit of a tan, the minute you swim into the sea, you crossed the date line, according to the Chazon Ish, because it goes around the coast, and it actually turns out to be Shabbos in the middle of the sea. Okay? So, how does that work? At what point in the sea do you actually hit Shabbos? So this is not a theoretical question. This is a real question. Is it like the minute you step in the water? That doesn't make any sense. Is it when the kind of continental shelf dips down a little bit out in a boat? According to Rav Herschel Schechter, the Chazon Ish's understanding is, yes, the line goes around the land, but that's the land. What happens if you take off in an aeroplane? The Chazon Ish didn't say anything about the air. If you take off from Australia on a Sunday, you're back in Shabbos on the plane. We'll get to that in a minute. Okay? And I'll give you another example. South Korea People go to South Korea on business. By the way, people go for Hashkocha all over the world, Vietnam and here, and Shlichim in Chabad go all over the world as well. If you go to South Korea, I doubt that you'll be going to North Korea, but you never know. But if you go to South Korea, you'll say, that's fine, you know, there's no problem, because South Korea is actually in the landmass of Asia, and therefore, according to the Chazon Ish, the line will keep it on the right side of the line. The problem is, Seoul Airport is on an island. And therefore, you're all right in South Korea, but once you take a cab to the airport, Sunday's turned back into Shabbos. So you can see that you're going to get into all sorts of unusual circumstances. The Bristol Rav, you should just know, said that, no, I take the actual line, I don't go around the landmass, and indeed, he will have the situation where it's Shabbos down the road and Sunday up the road. But certainly, according to the Chazon Ish, Japan, New Zealand, Tasmania, Fiji have already crossed the line, and they're going to have to keep Shabbos on a Sunday. Now, I have a friend who is from New Zealand. The New Zealanders know all about this, by the way, especially if they're Shomer Shabbos. If they're not Shomer Shabbos, then they're probably not that interested. And certainly the locals who are Shomer Shabbos, they keep Shabbos on Saturday. They don't keep Shabbos on Sunday, for reasons that will be obvious in a minute. However, visitors who want to be machmir like the Chazon Ish, and this is a psak that they get, are told they indeed have to keep 2 days of Shabbos. They have to keep Shabbos on Saturday, like the locals. You can't be swanning around as if it's Friday when everyone else says it's Shabbos. And you have to keep Shabbos on Sunday as well. And he actually went, this friend of mine, he went for his sister's wedding. And he was one of the best men, as it were, organizing the wedding. The wedding, of course, was on Sunday, which, of course, for him was Shabbos. So he kept Shabbos with the family, and Sunday he was machmir not to do doraisas. This way you have to become a Talmud Chacham. He is a Talmud Chacham, which is very fortunate. And you have to not do doraisas. He says you can do drabonans. The Chazon Ish wasn't machmir for drabonans. Or you can do a doraisa with a shinui. You can imagine what kind of difficulty this puts you in with your less religious family in New Zealand when on Sunday at the wedding you're trying to, you know, do things with a shinui because it's maybe Shabbat. And this is not a crazy chumrah by any means at all. This is a very mainstream sack you will get from lots of people. If you are visiting Fiji or New Zealand on a Sunday, you will have to keep Sunday as Shabbos as well. That's the Chazon Ish. Ad kan the Chazon Ish. Okay, go over to page 5. The Gesher Achaim, Rav Tukachinsky. Now, who was Rav Tukachinsky? Rav Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky was one of the leading calendar experts at the time in Yerushalayim. And he wrote back and he said, I do not agree with the Chazon Ish. I do not think that's what the Baal HaMa'or says. I don't think that the halakhic dateline goes down the line that the Chazon Ish says. He said, I don't think you have crossed the dateline. You're fine. Excuse me. He says, I hold that the dateline is not 90 degrees east of Yerushalayim, but 180 degrees east of Yerushalayim. Why? Because just like the British, Lahavdil, picked Greenwich as the center of the world and said, Britannia rules the waves, and therefore the dateline will be 180 degrees from here. Yerushalayim, as far as we're concerned, is the center of the world. Have a look in source number 6. Says the Midrash in Kedoshim, Parshat Kedoshim. Kashem shehatibur hazeh, just like a person's belly button, their navel. Natun be'emtza ha'ish is in the middle of a person. Kach Eretz Yisrael tiburo shel olam. Eretz Yisrael is the belly button of the world. It's the center of the world. Shneema yoshvi al tabur ha'aretz. That's why it's called Tabur Ha'aretz. Eretz Yisrael Yoshevet Be'emtzi Otav Shal Olam. Eretz Yisrael is the middle of the world. Yerushalayim Be'emtza Eretz Yisrael. Just as Yerushalayim is the middle of Eretz Yisrael. Now, you're already be scratching your head thinking, really? Yerushalayim is the middle of Eretz Yisrael? On what kind of geographical boundary are you putting Yerushalayim in the middle of Eretz Yisrael?
In terms of Kedusha.
Kedusha. Ah. So you're saying, it's not saying that geographically it's the middle of Eretz Yisrael, because it's clearly not. Even if you bring in Eva Hayarden and bring in Jordan, I south and whatever. Because don't forget, Eretz Yisrael doesn't go all the way down to Eilat, biblically. Eretz Yisrael goes down to sort of Beersheba. So Yerushalayim is for sure not in the middle. So you want to say, this is a midrash. This means in terms of Kedusha. So if that's the case, then what proof is this for the international dateline? It's in terms of Kedusha. The Maharal actually has a beautiful idea. And he says the word, the emtza, this has nothing to do with the dateline, but it's a beautiful hashkafa idea. Emtza is always the place which has the least gashmias and the most ruchnias. That's what it means. Why? He says, because the middle of something doesn't really exist. There is no middle. The middle is a purely abstract idea which has no real, actual, physical reality. What do I mean? So if I draw two lines on a piece of paper, so those two lines are the boundaries of whatever I've drawn. Where is the middle? So you'll say, okay, I'll draw down the middle. So I can zoom in on that line and say, okay, now that line looks this, but draw the middle. So you draw the middle down there. I can zoom in again and draw the middle down there, zoom in again. There is no middle. Because wherever you choose to draw the middle, I can always zoom in and say, well, look, now you have to draw a new middle. Because the middle only exists in an infinite sense. It's a very interesting idea. The same is true of time, of course. What is the only reality in time? Well, the past exists only in our memories. It doesn't exist in real time. The future hasn't happened yet. So the only thing that really exists is the present. Except the present is the one thing which clearly does not exist. Because the present can always be divided into the future and the past. Wherever you think you're defining the present, I can cut a line and say, well, no, it's either before or after. So the one thing which is the only thing that really does exist is the one thing which for sure does not exist. Now you know why it gets a bit complicated. I'll keep you awake at night a little bit. So I think you're right. It's talking about Kedusha, but says the Geshe Haim, look, this is talking also about the halachic date line. So he draws his date line actually through the middle of Alaska. Through the middle of Alaska. If you go back, there's a map also on page 5, but the best map actually is probably the one on page 4 that you had just a few minutes ago. If you look on page 4 again, you'll see it says on that big star K map, Rav Tukuchinsky line. You see that going through Alaska?
Yeah.
You with me? So according to Rav Tukuchinsky, the people in China, Japan, New Zealand, they're just 100% fine. The problem is the people in Alaska. Because for them, they think that actually it's Saturday, but really it's Sunday. And they have to keep Shabbos not on Saturday, but on Friday. They have to keep Shabbos on Friday. So they have to keep 2 days Shabbos, Friday and Saturday. Which is very interesting. So you're going to turn around and say, yeah, but can't we do that thing with Greira and draw the line around the coast of Alaska so Alaska will be fine? Okay, we could do that, maybe. Although he doesn't say it as clearly as the Chazon Ish. But that doesn't help the poor people in Hawaii, because Hawaii is stuck there in the middle of the ocean on the wrong side of Rav Tukuchinsky's line. So if you go to Hawaii for Shabbos, which I think quite a lot of Jewish people do, there are Jewish people live in Hawaii. Again, like the Jewish people in New Zealand, the Jews of Hawaii keep Shabbos on Saturday, because you'll see that they go with the Hatzvi. But for people who are visiting, then you'll have to keep Shabbos on Friday. So that actually is a bit tricky. It's easier to keep Shabbos on Sunday than to keep Shabbos on Friday. Why? Because on Sunday you can just relax. It's like another day of Shabbos with no Doraisas. On Friday you have to get ready for Shabbos. How do you get ready for Shabbos when it is Shabbos? And this is a real question. And there is a real question. How do you light Shabbos candles? How do you light Shabbos candles for Saturday, for Friday night into Saturday, when actually on Friday you're meant to be not keeping, you're meant to be not doing Doraisas. And the poskim say you have to take 2 electric torches, flashlights, for Shabbos candle, and you have to turn them on with a shinui. This is real, this is a real thing. This is not made up, this is not, you know, theoretical halacha. People who are visiting Hawaii, who want to keep Shabbos, Friday and Shabbos, have to work out how to do this. The worst of all, and this is the most interesting case I think, is that the island of Samoa, the island of Samoa at one point decided to change which side of the line it was on. So what they did is they went, they skipped to Friday. At the end of Thursday night, at 11:59 on Thursday night, they decided to go across straight to Saturday morning. They missed out Friday because they said we want to switch from one side of the line to the other, like I said. The problem is the island of Samoa actually is, again, right bang smack in that topic zone. So if you were there in Samoa on that particular Shabbos, and you were Shomer Shabbos, you would have had to keep Shabbos from Thursday night through till Sunday night, okay? Which would have been very interesting indeed. Talk about a 3-day Yontif, now you've got a 3-day Shabbos. He says it's not because you skipped Friday in the middle, but whatever. These are real Shilas we get asked to real people, and we have to work out how we're going to paskin. The Hatzvi kind of came to the rescue. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, at the bottom of page 5, said, listen, there's no such thing as a halachic dateline, okay? It doesn't exist. Chazal never really talked about it. That's not what the Balaam Oros really means. As you said quite rightly, this Gemara about Yerushalayim being the emptor of Israel and Israel being the emptor of the world is not really halachic, it's more midrashic and kedusha. Nachon, it's beautiful, important ideas, but not halachic. Said Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, there is no halachic deadline. So when do you keep Shabbos? So he said, look, you know when you keep Shabbos. Once there's a minhag ha'olam, you keep Shabbos when the olam keeps Shabbos. Look at number 7 on top of page 6. This is a source that we will see much more next time when we get into going to the north or south. Look at number 7. Ha'holech ba'midbar, someone who goes into the desert. The Eina Yodea Matai Hu Shabbos. And you lose track of time. You fell asleep, you passed out, you woke up again, you don't know which day it is. Sometimes people feel like that even when they're not in the midbar. But you don't know which day it is. When do you keep Shabbos? Maina Shiva Yamim Miyom Shinatan Aliboy Shikhasai. From the moment that you realize that you didn't know where you were in terms of time, and you woke up and said, I really don't know what day it is, you count 6 days from that day. And then you keep Shabbos on the 7th, Umakadesh Hashvi, and you keep Shabbos on the 7th day. It becomes an arbitrary Shabbos. It's Shabbos for you, because you've lost track of the rest of the world. But says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, of course, the minute you get back to civilization, you don't keep on with your personal, individual Shabbos, which was because you didn't know where you were. You flip back into everybody else. If everybody else says today's Saturday, then it's Saturday. That means it's Shabbos. Okay, so says the Hatzvi, clearly, if the world has decided there's a minhag ha'olam of the international dateline, then the international dateline is the halachic dateline, which resolves pretty much all of the problems. Okay, and therefore he says, you don't have to worry about the Chazon Ish, you don't have to worry about the Gesher HaChaim, Rav Tzur Kaczynski, you keep Shabbos when everybody else in the country you're in thinks that it's Saturday, and therefore everybody's happy. And that's what the locals do, because it's just not, it's okay for a visitor to keep Friday and Shabbos, or Shabbos and Sunday for 1 week, maybe two. But it's not really shayach for the individuals who live in that country to be keeping 2 days Shabbos every week. So they rely on this. It's a perfectly good psak. The Shabbos is indeed on the regular day. There is another position, what we call here the mid-Pacific postgame. We're not getting into that now. It's almost the same as the international dateline. So what are our conclusions? Let's conclude clearly. I brought them in number 6 here on the page. Australia, China, Russia, Korea, Hong Kong, and Taiwan are not a problem. Phew. Okay? If you're going to Japan, New Zealand, or Hawaii, ask a shayla. Okay? And you'll be surprised. If you do ask a shayla, by the way, let me know what the answer is. You went?
No,
you're going in June. To which?
Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, okay. You're going to New Zealand for Shabbos?
Two
Shabbos.
Oh, wow. Or four.
Oh, four. Yeah, Shtag Shem Arba. Maybe you could go to New Zealand one of the first Shabbos and Hawaii the second Shabbos, and then you're... who should you ask? So you decide who to ask and let me know what they say. Yes, sir.
East Coast Shabbos on the east coast of
New Zealand. The first Jews in the world to bring in Shabbos. Possibly. Because unless the Jew, there are Jews living on Samoa or Kiribati or something like that, which you never know, probably some Jew who wants to get away from it all. Yes.
Was in university with me, and he was doing doctoral work in Japan. So he went to Rav Soloveitchik Chick, and he said, "What should I do? Mm. What do you do about Shabbos in Japan?" And he said, "That's a very good question," and didn't give him an answer.
I told you it was complicated.
But it's a practical problem. He didn't give him an answer.
It is a practical problem, but I summarized here that in some places Shabbos on Sunday, in some places Friday and Shabbos. And some of the very tiny little mid-Pacific islands are very problematic, and you can ask a shayla if you ever go to Samoa or Fiji or somewhere like that. Now, let us move on, because there are other challenges, not just for the people in these Suffolk zones, but for people who take flights. People often, forget about keeping Shabbos for a second, people often fly across the dateline. This is regular. Ma'isim b'cholyon. People who take flights from Taiwan to LA or the other way around, they often cross the international dateline and clearly one of the halakhic datelines. What are the implications for doing that? I'll give you some examples in a couple of minutes. You can be flying on a Friday and all of a sudden it's Shabbos on the plane for about 2 hours before you cross the dateline and it goes back to Thursday night. Are you allowed to be on a plane for a couple of hours when it's Shabbos? What do you do? Okay, if you're on a boat, it's much more sort of, it's much slower progress, and you'll keep Shabbos on the boat properly. If you're on a plane, it's going to be Shabbos. You fly out of the airport on Friday morning, and you're on the plane, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. You're from Taiwan going to LA, and then all of a sudden, Friday afternoon, it's Shabbos on the plane, Shalom Aleichem, Malachai Asharet, okay? And then you cross the date line, it's Thursday night. Hamavda Ben Kodesh Lachol. So, that's a real scenario. And there are people who want to get home for Shabbos, that want to fly Friday morning from Taiwan into the airport in America, and they that's exactly what happens to them. We'll talk about that right now. There are issues of Sefirat HaOmer, there are issues of Tefillah. Sometimes you can be on a plane, and all of a sudden you skip a day. You know, you went from Monday straight to Wednesday. What happened to my Tuesday davening? Do I have to make that up somehow? What about a fast day? Fast days are very interesting. So you can either have a fast day, if you're flying from Eretz Yisrael, from America to Eretz Yisrael, and everything speeds up, time speeds up, then your fast day goes out much earlier than you otherwise would have done. And the other way around, if anyone's ever done this, I've done this to England, and that was bad enough, is you fly west on a fast day, and it never, never ends. And it goes on forever and ever and ever, and you're fasting like 18 hours, etc. Does there come a point when you say, you know something, I can just take out the fast, when it would have gone out in Israel, and I don't have to wait till it actually gets dark in America? Okay. 44 hours. From Eretz Israel to America. Oh, to Japan. Gosh. From Philadelphia to Japan, and you're flying constantly west, and wow. You see, what's going to happen there, though, is you're going to be in the middle of Tisha B'Av, and then all of a sudden it's going to turn into Sunday. So can you now say, well, Tisha B'Av just finished, because it's now Sunday, or do you turn around and say, well, no, it started Tisha B'Av, it has to finish at Tisha B'Av, and I can't just pretend that they are real shilas that come up. What about Hanukkah, when you fly over the date line? And you lit one candle, two candles, three candles, four candles. And then the next night, everyone around you is lighting six candles. You just skip five. Say, you know something, next year I'll do five candles. Okay? What about the other way around? You do one, two, three, four, and you're ready for five, and you get to a place, and they're still doing four. Now you go back again, you do four again. You can't do four. You're on five. You already did four. That's the real question. Well, Sefirat HaOmer. Sefirat HaOmer is a bit easier because you can come, you can count by day without a bracha. We'll see. Sefirat HaOmer. What about if you have a bris? If you have a newborn baby and you take the baby on the plane and you cross the date line, do you go according to the date, or you go according to how old the baby is?
You don't get into that situation.
Okay, most people don't fly with a newborn, but you might. What about people counting Shiva Nikiyim before mikveh, vestas and things like that? So let's have a look at a couple of those issues. If you look on page 7, you'll see I've written down three different flights. These are real flights. These are real flights that people take. Flight 1 is just from New York to Taiwan. It's a westbound flight, so they lose the day. You depart Sunday at 12 noon. And you arrive in Taiwan on Monday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You skip a day, basically. You lose a day. You go from Sunday straight in to Monday. And obviously, you've missed out Sunday Maariv and Monday Shacharit. That just disappeared. And if Sunday is a fast day, again, when does that fast end? We'll deal with that question. Flight 2 is the one I mentioned just before, the other way around. You're in business in China for the week. You want to fly home for Shabbos. So you leave Taiwan 10 o'clock a.m. on Friday morning. And you land, after a 13-hour flight in New York, at 10 o'clock Friday morning. You land exactly the same time that you took off. So again, what happened there is, you daven Shacharis on Friday. Now there's another Shacharis you have to daven on the new Friday. And the fast day questions, and then specifically the Shabbos question, Shabbos came in and then abruptly went out again. And then there's Flight 3. Flight 3 is very interesting. Flight 3 takes off on Friday in Los Angeles. And you fly into Shabbos just for a short time, until then you skip a day forward into Motzei Shabbos. Yeah? And you basically ended up with a 3-hour Shabbos, so that's it, it's Oy Shabbos, because you're now in Motzei Shabbos. What are you going to do in those solutions? So let's have a look at some solutions, and we'll see what people say, and then you can take these to your local Orthodox rabbi when you cross the date line, and see what they say. So most people understand that Shabbos comes in according to the actual location that one is in. And by the way, according to most poskim, that's where you are on the ground. Meaning when you're 37,000 feet up in the air, there's a different view of the sun. You're on a different angle to the sun. So you may still be able to see the sun from 37,000 feet when the people on the ground already cannot see the sun. It's already sunset. And the halacha goes according to where you are on the ground. That's why you need to spend the time looking at that little map of where you are, and that's why they invented that in the plane, so the people who are halakhically trying to work out when to daven mincha can see, look, I'm right here over Nova Scotia, and they'll have it all pre-prepared. If you go onto MyZmanim, which is an app and a website, they will not only tell you when the Zmanim are for where you are, but if you put in your flight plans, they will tell you if you take this curve, then these are the times for mincha. This curve. I've done this a few times, and you plan out and you said if your flight's delayed by 15 minutes, this is what happens to your flight plan, and it's all very thought through. And therefore, Shabbos comes in and goes out exactly where you are. So if you're on a plane and Friday night comes in, then it's Shabbos. Now, you don't have to make Kiddush, you don't have to make Havdalah, but you do have to keep Shabbos. And therefore, that really leaves some issues. Using the bathroom becomes a problem because every time you shut the door, lock the door, the light goes on. So maybe you could ask someone to help you with that. Exactly how you do that, you'll have to work out for yourself. Okay? And many of the poskim are unhappy with taking that flight, but they say, look, if that's the only flight you can take to get home for Shabbos, you're in Taiwan on business, you want to be with your family for Shabbos, so okay, you fly Friday morning, you'll go into Shabbos for a few hours, and you'll go back then to Thursday night, and you'll land. The same the other way around, if you flew from LA, you fly into Shabbos before it goes into Motzei Shabbos, you can actually do that under certain circumstances, but they prefer that you don't. Like we said before, if you're into the Chazon Ish, every time you take off on a Sunday from anywhere over the other side of his line, you're in problems. Because it could be Shabbos the whole day. Really, if you take up on Sunday morning, you're in some serious questions, and therefore you need to think about that, whether you fly on a Sunday or whether you don't fly on a Sunday. Matzah. Imagine you're flying on Chol HaMoed, first night Chol HaMoed, and you go suddenly back a day, and all of a sudden it's Seder night all over again. And you're on a plane. Okay? That can happen. Do you need to eat matzah again? So the poskim say no. Matzah is once and once only. You might be pleased to hear that. And therefore, whereas Shabbos is dependent of the day of the week, matzah is a once-a-year obligation. Had a question?
Yeah, I'm wondering about Kiddush. So you only make Kiddush when it's...
Because it's not really Shabbos for you.
It's only Shabbos.
You keep Shabbos with Chumrah, really. You keep the Doraitas. You keep the Malachas of Shabbos.
So the only time it's real Shabbos is when everyone's keeping Shabbos.
Correct. And if you're on the New York flight, then that works to New York, because you will get Shabbos that week. Because even though you've got a 3-hour kind of fake Shabbos, but really it's kind of Shabbos, don't worry because you'll arrive on Friday morning, you'll have a proper Shabbos. But on the other way round, actually you will miss Shabbos. Because if you leave the LA flight on Friday, you'll actually get into Shabbos and then immediately it'll be Motzei Shabbos, and that's all the Shabbos that you've had. Yes?
Kiddush,
yes, it's a good question why they don't make Kiddush. I mean, is that enough of a... it's a good question, I don't know. In a situation where you are going to have a Shabbos tomorrow anyway, then it makes sense to say, look, I'll be making Kiddush tomorrow night for the local Shabbos. In a case where you're going to miss Shabbos completely, it's a good question. I didn't see that. I don't know. Maybe you could... the truth is, you can be Yotzei Kiddush Doraita by just singing Zmirah. Yeah, you could say, Yom Zeh Mechuba Mikol Yamim Kivo Shabbos Sor Olamim, and you fulfill the mitzvah Doraita. Maybe you should do that. I don't suggest you try and light candles on the plane. Okay, fine. Electric ones like on Hanukkah, it doesn't really work for Hanukkah, for Shabbos it works. Let's talk about Hanukkah right now. So Rav Scheinberg and Rav Kanievsky says that basically Hanukkah is date specific. You just stay in line with the rest of the world. If you skip, okay, then you skip with the rest of the world. Rav Eliashiv says no, Hanukkah is not date specific. And you know that because sometimes Rosh Chodesh can be one day, and sometimes it can be 2 days. Hanukkah can have different dates. He says, basically, you have to light one extra candle than what you lit the night before. So if you go to a place, you've done 1, 2, 3, 4, and you're ready for 5, and you go to a place where everybody else is lighting 4, you can't light 4, because you're ready for 5. But you can't light 5, because everybody else is lighting 4. So what do you do? This is very simple. You light one. Because the basic mitzvah of Hanukkah is to light one candle. Nera Yishu Beisai. So, what are your yotzei kodesh to everyone? Ah, so you won't be mahadrin, men mahadrin? Fine. He says, by the time you get to the eighth night, when you're done already, you've kept 8 days of Hanukkah, everybody else is lighting 8 candles, and you're done. So, again, he says, you light 8 candles as a fake it, without a bracha, and everyone's happy. But these are shilas that come up. Tefillah, basically, if you skip a day, you don't have to daven again. If you repeat the day, there's a big question. Meaning, I davened all the Monday stuff. And now it's Monday all over again. It's Groundhog Day. It's Monday all over again. Do I have to daven all over again? I already davened all my Monday stuff. Do I have to daven again? So some people say yes, some people say no, and then you get into Tefillas Nadava. Maybe you can daven a Tefillas Nadava, a voluntary Shemona Esrei on the extra day. Maybe you can say Hallel without a Brocha. You can do Birkas HaShachar, that's fine because that goes by the sunlight. Other things maybe you could say in your head. It gets very complicated, but you have to plan that out. Kriya Shema is easy, that goes by sunrise and sunset. Svirsa Omer, again, you could always count during the day without a brocha and then join everybody the night after, so that's usually not going to be a problem. Fast days are very interesting, and I'll leave you to read this more for yourself. Certainly if you're lucky enough that the fast goes out early, then good for you, the fast has gone out, it's night time. The Gemara says in number 8, Amar Rav Chisda, Kal Tanis Shaloi Shaka Alat Chama, Loi Shmei Tanis. There has to be a Shkia Tachama. It has to be sunset on a fast for it to be really a fast. So if the sunset happened quicker, then fine. If the sunset happened slower, then you need to ask a Shaila, because the case where the lady said over there that the Rav kept 44 hours as a fast on Tisha B'Av, if he can do that, that's great. Not everyone can do that, and you'll certainly get upset from many poskim that you can take out the Tanis when you would have taken out the Tanis had you been where you were before. And then there are all sorts of combinations of if you fly forward a day, backwards a day, you have to stop the fast, start the fast. I'll leave you to read this on your own. I've put all the possible combinations I could think of there. When it comes to Bris Mila, there's a debate. Rav Scheinberg says, we only care about the 8th age of the baby. You wait 8 days, and on the 8th day, that is the Brit Milah. And if that happens, so usually the Brit Milah is on the same day of the week as the birth, right? If the baby's born on Tuesday, so the Brit Milah will be on Tuesday. That's the 8th day. So he says, I don't care. So if it's on Monday or if it's on Wednesday, as long as it's the 8th day, it's the 8th day. Oh, that's very interesting. So if your 8th day is, well, why is it going to be a problem? Your 8th day, you'll do it on your 8th day, and if it's Friday, it's good, and if it's Shabbos, it's good, also good, and if it's Sunday, it's good, it won't be a problem if it's on the 8th day. Shiva Nakim is very interesting. Shiva Nakim, when women are counting for mikveh, so, again, they have to count 7 actual days. The same is true of Shiva as well. If someone, God forbid, is sitting Shiva, so they have to count 7 actual days. An interesting Shaila comes up with women who, let's say, do their Hefsek Tara in New York, and then they fly during that week to Israel. Are they allowed to go to the mikveh at nightfall in Israel, even though that is 7, 8, 9 hours earlier than they would have been allowed to go to the mikveh if they were still in New York? The answer is yes, that's fine, because for that, it's wherever you are fit. So you can see these are not theoretical shilas. These are real questions asked by real people. It's not that complicated, but it needs a little bit of thought. So Miriam, when you've thought through your New Zealand plans, please let us know how it goes and send us pictures of you lighting candles on Friday and Shabbos and Sunday, etc., etc. Next week we go further north, and we'll see some fascinating tshuvas from Rav Yaakov Emden, Tiferes Yisrael, and other people. We'll leave it there for now. Sort of back up.